The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. Unfortunately, I don't have a guest for this week, so I'm going to read some military-oriented materials. Remembering those who sacrificed for America. When Jane Horton hears somebody say, "Happy Memorial Day," it makes every one of her nerves stand on end. That's not what the day is about. The Defense Department's senior advisor for Gold Star and surviving family members says, "Sure, Memorial Day marks the traditional beginning of summer vacation season. The three-day weekend involves picnics and barbecues and family trips, but it is also about acknowledging the debt Americans owe to those who died to protect the country. There is this one special day each year called Memorial Day, and that is the day to remember the fallen and those who have made the ultimate sacrifice," Horton says. "Memorial Day is a time for Americans to reflect on the sacrifices of so many to secure the country and protect its citizens. Since the country was founded, well over 1 million Americans died in the nation's wars. Service members are still in harm's way in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. Memorial Day grew out of the carnage of the Civil War, when more than 600,000 Union service members died, giving the nation, as President Abraham Lincoln said, a new birth of freedom. After such an overwhelming loss, Americans in the North and the South remembered those killed. Arlington National Cemetery, created in 1864 to bury those killed in the Civil War's overland campaign, was the site of family picnics on Memorial Day, as families from all over the country visited to place flowers on the graves of their loved ones. Those who have paid that price were like Jane's husband, Army Specialist Christopher Horton, an Army sniper killed in Afghanistan on September 9, 2011. "Chris would want people to enjoy their long weekend," she said, "but they should take some time to remember and understand why they are free," she added. "That doesn't mean they have to be somber or they have to obsess over it, but they should keep the sacrifice in the back of their heads. The best way to honor the fallen is to live the best life possible, especially for service members," she said. "That's what I try to do," she added. "I have fun, go fishing, live the American dream, and remember and learn different stories of those who played the ultimate sacrifice for me." Horton is worried that Americans are almost divorced from the losses suffered by those in uniform. "People don't understand that this is real," she said. "They don't understand that people really go to defend us so the enemy doesn't come here. And sometimes they die." Horton is working on care and support to Gold Star and surviving families, because we can always do better, she said. "I'm also working to give more senior leaders access to Gold Star and surviving families," she added. Horton said she wants senior leaders to understand how strong these families are and that the force needs to see the strength of the families left behind and how we want to continue supporting the missions our loved ones gave their lives for. Finally, Horton suggested that families know the names and know the stories of those who sacrificed for Americans they never met. "Learn a name this weekend," she said. "Teach your kids a story about that loss. Then go and have fun." Next article, Blood and Sacrifice, The Battle of a Soldier's Soul, Ryan Hulon's story. Ryan Hulon, H-U-L-O-N, learned the hard way freedom isn't free. A paratrooper in the 2nd Unit of the 505th Infantry Regiment of the 82nd Airborne Division, Ryan escaped death and physical injury only by the grace of God during perilous combat missions in Kosovo, Afghanistan, and Iraq. But war cost the lives of 28 of his U.S. Army brothers, and counting. It cost a piece of himself, and it cost his family. "I came home, but I left a part of me over there," Ryan says. One of my friends told me that a few years of service will give you a lifetime of demons, but I'll never regret it. I had a duty to my country to protect it. I had a duty to my brothers to take a bullet for them if I had to. When he enlisted at 19, Ryan saw only the honor of serving his country and the thrill of jumping out of planes, but that innocence didn't last long, especially in the aftermath of September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. Ryan and his then fiance Jessica felt the consequences immediately, even if they were only dimly aware of what lay ahead. The couple had to scrap their wedding and honeymoon plans for the end of that month, and they rushed to tie the knot at a courthouse not far from the Army base at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. They were newlyweds barely a week before Ryan was deployed to Afghanistan to fight the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. When you're an infantry soldier, you see casualties of war. Innocent people die. There's nothing you can do about it. What followed was months at a time of separation, with only the occasional letter, care package, and phone call to stay connected. Ryan wasn't there to support his wife during Jessica's pregnancy with their first child, Skye. And he missed almost all of his daughter's first year. "I'm sad about the time I lost with my family," Ryan says. "There was so much time I was gone in the first few years of our marriage. I feel like the first few years it was more about me being in the military than a husband or father." Tough as they were, those losses paled by comparison to the emotional horrors Ryan had witnessed. During his first mission in Kosovo, in former Yugoslavia, he saw children killed and maimed by landmines and homes with families still in them burned by Serbian forces. In Iraq, terrorist insurgents would use innocents as human shields. Together, those traumatic experiences and Ryan's own brushes with death drove him to question why he was still alive while so many others had died, including his own brothers-in-arms who were closer than family. "The only way I've experienced any healing is Jesus. Jesus was the only person who could calm me. He's the one who set me free of all my issues." While in Iraq, his conversations with a U.S. Army chaplain led Ryan to ask Jesus into his life and be baptized in Iraq's Tigris River. When you are an infantry soldier, you see casualties of war. Innocent people die. And there's nothing you can do about it, Ryan says. On his return home from active duty in 2004, the Hulun's marriage was troubled for years as Ryan battled depression and suicidal thoughts, and Jessica struggled to understand why he just couldn't snap out of it. By night, Ryan was terrorized by nightmares. By day, Ryan was gripped by the need to stay battle-ready at all times. "I didn't want her to see my weakness," Ryan says. "I wanted to show her that I was strong." As the emotional distance widened between them, Jessica questioned whether their marriage could survive. "I had pretty much put up a wall," Jessica says. "I was not understanding him and not even trying to. It got to that point. Jesus has set my heart on fire to help these guys who don't know who to turn to, who don't know how to get the help they need." It was amid those struggles that the Hulons were invited to New Spring Church in 2006. That's where Ryan learned to surrender his guilt, receive forgiveness, and fully trust Jesus for strength and peace through the emotional battle he had to wage with his memories. And that's where Jessica began a relationship with Jesus that enabled her to support Ryan with the love, grace, and understanding only God could provide. The Hulons knew the high price paid by veterans and their families to protect this nation and preserve our freedoms. But they've also come to learn what it means for Jesus to have paid the ultimate sacrifice and won the greatest freedom of all. "The only way I've experienced any healing is through Jesus," Ryan says. "Jesus was the only person who could calm me. He's the one who set me free of all my issues." Now 36, Ryan is dedicated to helping other veterans and their families find help, hope, and healing in Jesus too. As part of an informal suicide support network, it's a day-to-day reality for Ryan to find himself talking down a veteran threatening to take his own life. Prescription drugs and counseling alone cannot cure the despair that is leading veterans to a suicide rate of 22 a day, he says. Jesus is the only cure when you're staring down the barrel of that gun and there's nobody else around, Ryan says. In addition to volunteering with Upstate Warrior Solution, a local group modeled on the Wounded Warrior Project, he also leads a New Spring group specifically for veterans. Jesus has set my heart on fire to help these guys who don't know who to turn to, who don't know how to get help, Ryan says. The only answer is Jesus, he says. That was Ryan Hulan's story. Next, remembering veterans so that their service and sacrifice does not fade, by Carla D. Hayden. And Dr. Carla D. Hayden is the Librarian of Congress. On this Memorial Day, 75 years after D-Day, we remember the American soldiers who gave their lives during their serving their country, from the beaches of Normandy to the jungles of Vietnam, the sands of the Middle East, and the skies of Southeast Asia. To ensure the memory of these brave Americans and their sacrifice will never fade, the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress has been working energetically with Congress to preserve their stories. Congress created the Veterans History Project nearly 20 years ago, directing the Library of Congress to develop a program that would collect, preserve, and make accessible to future generations the personal memories of our nation's veterans and their families. Since then, the library has collected more than 110,000 personal remembrances. The stories of these veterans, along with original photographs, letters, diaries, and maps donated to the library, are an invaluable cultural resource that has informed the historical record and illuminated the times in which our nation's veterans served. The library's collection includes the testimonials of veterans who served from World War I through our most recent military conflicts. The project contains submissions from every state, including the U.S. territories. Moving posthumous collections donated by loved ones include the submissions of Gold Star family members, the parents, spouses, siblings, and children of members of the armed forces who die as a result of their military service. Some amazing stories have been collected and preserved. Mark Ryan Black of Indiana served as a Marine in the Vietnam War. Before his deployment, he told his family, "Don't expect me to write much." However, he not only wrote many letters, he tape-recorded audio letters, too, many of which his family donated, along with over 340 personal photographs detailing his time in service. The collection also includes a letter describing the school that was built at the site of the battle where he was killed in action. Larry Michael Jordan of Cheyenne, Wyoming, was drafted 2 weeks before his college graduation. He served on the USS Kitty Hawk, to which he was returning when his plane was shot down over China, and he was declared missing in action. At the time, his wife was pregnant with twins. His poignant collection that his family compiled includes poems he wrote, photographs, letters, and documents detailing his service and the search for his remains. Still other collections about veterans who have since deceased present an enduring legacy of their voices and experiences. Vernon Baker of St. Marie's, Idaho, who fought in World War II with the 92nd Infantry Division, a segregated division known as the Buffalo Soldiers Unit, which eventually became the first living African-American to be awarded the Medal of Honor. Alice Dixon of Boston, Massachusetts, served with the 6888th Central Postal Battalion in Women's Army Corps, the only unit made up entirely of African-American women to serve overseas during World War II, whose motto was, No Mail, No Morale. These veterans, now deceased, inform today's and tomorrow's generations at even greater depth through new tools that enable the Library of Congress and researchers alike to view and hear them in new and powerful ways. The story of Robert Horr, H-O-R-R, who survived D-Day only to be tragically killed in a glider accident right before the end of the war, is interwoven with others who landed on the D-Day beaches and rendered in compelling detail in a new story map. Through it, we unravel in an almost contemporary real-time nature that the baby daughter he never met, through her donation, is responsible for his story in enriching our national understanding of D-Day and military service. With the 75th anniversary of the Normandy invasion on June 6, the Veterans History Project is uniquely able to make the voices of those who were there accessible to enliven shared history and shape common understanding about historical events like D-Day. These stories are already informing the work of researchers, filmmakers, and educators, from household names like Ken Burns, who used our collection in creating his 2017 documentary on the Vietnam War, to the curators of exhibitions at museums and local libraries across the country. Teachers are using these stories to enhance curriculums in elementary and secondary schools, and scholars at universities through the world are incorporating this material into the historical record through books, journals, and dissertations. The Veterans History Project website and searchable database attracts 3 million views annually. Visitors and researchers are also using the collection regularly on-site at the Library of Congress. Through our exhibitions, programs, and reference services, last year more than 1 million visitors came into contact with the Veterans History Project collection. The personal remembrances of veterans needs to be recorded. The Census Bureau reports there are more than 18 million veterans in the United States, 600,000 from World War II, 1.5 million from the Korean War, 6.5 million from the Vietnam War, 3.8 million from the Persian Gulf War, and another 3.5 million from military conflicts since the September 11 attacks. Our Veterans History Project relies on volunteers throughout the nation to gather the first-person narratives of the veterans in their lives and communities. Many members of Congress have hosted workshops, encouraged local organizations to become involved, and highlighted the service and sacrifice of veterans they represent through traditional news outlets, social media, and websites. One of the most special parts of my job as the Librarian of Congress is to be with members in their states when they attend a Veterans History Project workshop. It is such an honor to meet these heroes and to receive their historical testimonials. As a participant of the Veterans History Project once said, all veterans deserve the opportunity to be remembered so that their sacrifice and service for our country might not fade and be forgotten with the passage of time. Dr. Carla D. Hayden, Librarian of Congress. Next, from the Baltimore Sun, Military Families Sacrifice Most of All, by Chase Spears. I have been a soldier for 14 years now and am the son and grandson of men who served in the U.S. Army and Navy. I am stationed in Washington, D.C., but my wife and I chose to live in southern Maryland to enjoy the quiet that comes with some space from the city. There are not many of us soldiers in the area, and few people typically guess that I am in the military. My wife and I recently visited a local antique shop and struck up a conversation with a vendor named Cindy Lohman. She immediately asked if I was in the military. She's a military mom, and they seem to have radar for troops. She is also a Gold Star mom. Her son, Army Sergeant Ryan Bauman, served in the famed 101st Airborne Division, she told us. He died in Afghanistan on August 1, 2008. Until that moment, I thought that the impact of a service member dying was something that mostly affects those of us in uniform. Ms. Lohman's story reminded me that the heaviest weight of military sacrifice is borne by the families left behind. When troops salute the fallen as their remains are loaded onto the helicopter at a forward operating base, or salute their memory at an installation memorial service, the grief often passes quickly. There is still a mission to carry on. I never had to experience the pain that a family feels when their son or daughter is honored with the sound of taps and a 21-gun salute. At every transfer of remains or memorial service I have attended, I thought of the family and prayed for them. I sometimes tried to imagine what they were going through, but I could not bear to think of it for more than a few minutes. But face to face with this Gold Star mother, I felt an immediate kinship. Her son's unit was deployed to the eastern province of Khost in 2008. This is the same province I deployed to in 2011. Ryan's unit was attacked on a road known as Route Alaska. I deployed to Afghanistan from Alaska. He was a member of the historic 101st Airborne Division. I am proud to serve in the Army as a paratrooper. If Ryan were alive today, it is possible that our paths would cross. He reportedly had bad dreams of making the Army a career. He was engaged. Like so many before in our nation's history, he was willing to give a life that meant safety was never assured. I will never know him, but his memory lives on in the hearts of his family and friends, and in the stories they still tell about him. In those moments with Cindy, time and distance became small obstacles to a shared story. She was not looking for sympathy. This mother is proud of her son's service and cares deeply for those who wear the uniform. On Memorial Day, we remember the men and women who have given to the nation through military service. I typically think of the 8 soldiers who did not come back with my brigade when we returned from Afghanistan in 2012. Specialist Jeffrey White, Staff Sergeant Thomas Fogarty, PFC Richard McNulty, Sergeant Brian Walker, PFC Vincent Ellis, PFC Nathan Davis, Staff Sergeant Carl Hamar, and Specialist Ethan Martin. This year, I will also think of Sergeant Ryan Bauman and his mom. Chase Spears is a U.S. Army major currently studying as an Army Advanced Civil Schooling Fellow at Georgetown University. His opinions are his own and do not reflect any official policy or position of the Department of the Army. Lastly, this is titled Ultimate Sacrifice. Harvard-trained lawyer and Major League Baseball player Eddie Grant volunteered to serve in World War I. He fought as he'd played, selflessly, by Kevin Coyne, Smithsonian Magazine. A chill rain, half-sleet at times, had fallen through the night in the craggy ravines of France's Argonne Forest. Now at dawn, fog hung low over the ground. Pale light seeped in from a sun rising somewhere out of sight. Captain Eddie Grant and the men of his weary infantry company roused themselves from their damp sleep beside a muddy stream. Surrounded by a dense wall of trees whose leaves had just begun to yellow, they could see no farther than a grenade's throw ahead. Somewhere out there, Germans waited in an elaborate network of trenches they had occupied for 4 years. Behind Grant and the men of Company H stretched a trail of dead and dying soldiers. The Americans had many more miles to go, though the most unyielding and unforgiving territory along the Western Front. Their orders from the commander of the American Expeditionary Forces, General John J. Pershing himself, were to move forward, only forward, at all cost. Eddie Grant had been in France the length of a baseball season. And now was the time of year, the first week of October 1918, when his attention would normally have turned toward the World Series. 5 Octobers ago, he had played in one himself with John McGraw's New York Giants. Attorney Eddie Grant came through from second base like the 20th Century Limited traveling past a flag station. The New York Times described his appearance as a pinch runner in the 10th inning of the second game. He scored, winning the game for the Giants, but it was the only one the team would win in the series. The Philadelphia Athletics would sweep the next three. Sports writers called him names like Attorney Grant or Harvard Eddie. In an era when many ball players were rough-edged illiterates with plow-calloused hands, Grant's unusual academic pedigree became his defining characteristic. Like pitcher Mordecai Brown's three fingers, pitcher Chief Bender Chippewa heritage, or outfielder Wee Willie Neeler's height. Grant had started his professional career in 1905 before graduating from Harvard, to which he returned in the off-season to finish law school. While his teammates crowded saloons after games, Grant went to the opera or the theater. On long train rides to Chicago and St. Louis, he passed up the card games for hours alone with his pipe and a book. Other players often asked him, the only member of the Massachusetts bar able to hit a big leg curve ball, for advice on their contracts. He was better in the field, third base mostly, than he was at bat, although in 1909 he did get 7 hits in a row in a doubleheader against 2 future Hall of Famers, Christy Mathewson and Rube Marquard. Grant was tall and rangy, with a hangdog look about him, jug ears, receding chin, freckles, and a New Englander's native reserve. His eyes were a piercing blue. His sense of humor was dry, not broad. My grandfather, General Grant, was a little rough on you down here when they got him riled, he once taunted a crowd giving him a hard time at an exhibition game in Texas, although he was no relation to the Union Army hero. Toward the end of his career and during his time in the Army, Eddie Grant's taciturnity deepened into something more like melancholy. One day he pulled out a small picture from the diary he carried with him and showed it to his commander, another Harvard man, Major Delancey Jay. It was a portrait of a pretty young woman in a prim high-neck suit, with a platter-sized hat and a wistful, vaguely aristocratic gaze. "This is my wife," he told Jay, quietly and unexpectedly, announcing the existence of a woman no one in his regiment had ever heard him speak of before. And I'll give you a spoiler alert, Eddie Grant does die in combat, and hopefully we'll get to finish that reading one day. Well, Salute a Veteran Every Day is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And it's been my pleasure to read for you today. If you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138.